Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. A comedian has won the first round of Ukraine's presidential election. Volodymyr Zelensky doesn't have strong policy positions. Maybe that was his greatest appeal, though he made it clear corruption is Ukraine's biggest challenge. Fixing Ukraine's very serious problems is no laughing matter. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Adriel Constanta in London. He is a political consultant and foreign affairs analyst. Also in London, we have Alexander McCurris. He is the director and writer for TheDuran.com. And in Sonoma, California, we cross to John Jordan. He is a political strategist. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Well, one of my rules of my program is that I go to the person that got up earliest for this program, and that goes to John. Good morning. I hope you had your coffee. My first question is, what kind of game changer is this election in Ukraine? It's far from over, but we have a comedian that won the largest number of votes. And we'll talk about the people that weren't allowed to vote in this election as well. Go ahead, John, in Sonoma.
There are two primary factors to this campaign. As you pointed out, it is the anti-corruption message, which has clearly resonated. The other piece of this, which hasn't been talked about so much, is language. There are two pieces to Ukraine. While there's a strong national identity, there's a portion of Ukraine which is Russian-speaking. And recently, Mr. Poroshenko, there's been language bills making Ukrainian the primary language, blocking Russian language websites and so forth. Mr. Zelensky is a Russian speaker, although he is a Ukrainian patriot, and he may actually, his ace in the hole here may be the fact that he does very, very well with the Russian speakers and then splits the Ukrainian speakers with Mr. Poroshenko.
Okay, Alexander McCurris, I mean, Poroshenko's whole emphasis on the military, hating Russia, and basically creating a schismatic Orthodox Church, I guess that didn't go down too well with the electorate, because at the end of the day, if you look at the disenfranchised, the 3 million Russians living in, Ukrainians living in Russia that weren't allowed the franchise, he got, and you take into account the turnout, he got about 9% of the vote. Go ahead, Alexander.
Yeah. Well, I think that Poroshenko's whole approach has fallen very flat, because he has set himself up as the strong national leader leading Ukraine in this conflict with Russia. And it's quite clear, looking at how Ukrainians voted, that they don't want more war, that they don't like the economic crisis that Ukraine is still in. I mean, the country is still facing an industrial recession, wages are still falling, they don't like the corruption, and those are the issues that really concern them, not these national issues that Poroshenko fought the election on. And it seems to me that you're perfectly right to say that Zelensky doesn't have any very clear policy positions. So the way to understand this election is not so much as a vote for Zelensky, as a vote against Poroshenko and all the things that Poroshenko stands for, which has been the line Ukraine has been following since the events in Maidan in February 2014. So it is in effect a repudiation of that policy. Yeah. And you're perfectly correct. If those millions of Ukrainians who now in Russia had been able to vote, they would have probably voted even more for Zelensky, and Poroshenko's share of the vote would have been even less.
Adriel, it's good to you in London. It's quite remarkable. It still could happen, but it was remarkable that you didn't have Victoria Nuland visiting during this election here. I mean, there was no overt Western support of Poroshenko, though he was their candidate when he ran the first time. Go ahead in London.
Well, that's very true. I do agree with you. But I think that the last month's scandal with the defense procurement scared out Americans from being involved in supporting Mr. Poroshenko. So we have, as a previous guest rightly said, we have two-dimensional win for Mr. Zelensky. First of all is the corruption scandal related to the defense procurement related to the son of the close business partner of Mr. Poroshenko. And the other one is the fact that Mr. Zelensky is a well-known actor and he's playing a president in his and the TV series called Servant of the People. And the main character, who is the historian, a lecturer, became a president because of the fact that he was against the corruption. So I think that those TV series are resonating with the mood and the spirit within the Ukrainian society, which doesn't want to see any longer a professional politicians who are corrupted. And they want to see an ordinary man, because Mr. Zelensky is an ordinary man. His campaign was conducted through the social media, and it strongly resonated with the young generation. So I think that it is it can be the same precedent as same as with regard to Bernie Sanders, Brexit, or Mr. Donald Trump, that people are shifting from the professional politicians to the people who are easily accessible or resonate with the general mood of the nation. And Mr. Zelensky, indeed, is resonating with the general mood of the nation.
You know, John, let's go back to California. I mean, we hear that's a very good point that we just heard here, because you had Yulia Tymoshenko, you know, obviously Poroshenko. I mean, these people have been in Ukrainian politics and governments for the last decade and a half. I mean, they've certainly known quantities here. And this is a rejection of the dominant political class, because, well, they tried it with the Orange Revolution, they tried it with the Maidan, but they're still not serving up the goods, as it were, to the population because of the trade policies that Ukraine has against Russia, against its own national interest here. I think that there are other people, there are many people that are saying the status quo cannot stand, somebody has to stand in and do it. Now, if he can create a power base and support and attract institutional support, those are all huge questions. Go ahead, in California.
Absolutely. This is an election which is more against something than for something. Zelensky is essentially an empty vessel in a lot of ways, with poorly articulated, if at all, policy positions. But he is the character he plays on television, which is remarkable. But this is about being against the status quo. This is, in an English vernacular, American vernacular, we call it a screw-it election. This is Brexit and Trump all over again. Now, can he survive? Will there be I think Mr. Zelensky wins this election, but how he fares is an open question, because the entrenched bureaucracy and oligarchy is going to be very, very hard to remove. Now, if the Ukrainian economy were very strong, it would be harder for him to win and easier for Mr. Poroshenko, but I just don't see how Mr. Poroshenko hangs on.
Yeah, Alexander Makiris, let's go to you in London. The fat lady hasn't sung. I guess I'm going to get in a lot of trouble. I suppose that's politically incorrect to say, but I said it. We still have a round two here, and Poroshenko has enormous administrative resources, particularly in the media here. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that some event, some provocation could still come into play here.
Absolutely. I mean, it is not over. There still isn't a second round. Mr. Poroshenko knows Ukrainian politics very well. He's got all the levers that he can press and pull as president of Ukraine. He has massive resources behind him. And of course, he's also now maneuvering Zelensky into a TV debate where he will probably, as the more experienced candidate, hope to win points against Zelensky. Nonetheless, the fact remains that Zelensky has polled almost twice as many votes as Poroshenko. He's riding the rejectionist, the anti-establishment vote in Ukraine. And I would have thought that the people who voted for the third and fourth candidates, Mrs. Tymoshenko and Mr. Boyko, are more likely to support him in the second round. Yeah. So I think it would be an upset, a major upset, if Zelensky doesn't win. But the problem is, It's all very well to say, you know, that he's this populist candidate who's winning because he's against things. I think the problem is, given the problems of Ukraine, what you need is not someone who's just, you know, voted because he's a negative. You need somebody who has a sort of more transcendental ability to take Ukraine's problems, move them forward, has the political weight and authority to actually start to address them. And at this moment in time, I'm far from sure, that's putting it mildly, that Zelensky is that person. I'll wait and see, but you know, I have no great hopes that he's going to be able to make much of an impression, even if he wins.
Yeah, well, the Ukrainians, their hopes have been dashed time and again ever since their independence. Anyway, let's talk about the 900-pound gorilla in the corner, and that's Igor Kolomoisky, the oligarch their sources, people report, make claims that Zelensky is very close to Kolomoisky, and we know what that means, that the oligarchs will continue to shift and mold the politics of Ukraine. The very origins of Ukraine's problems are these people and the way they run the economy for themselves, by the way. Go ahead in London.
Well, I would be very skeptical with, saying that Mr. Zelensky is a puppet of
I didn't say puppet. Go ahead.
No. I'm just relating to the to the newspapers here in London and in the United States calling him a puppet. So with all due respect, I just want to make clear that the fact that in the channel 1+1 owned by Mr. Kolomoisky, where the Servant of the People TV series where Mr. Zelensky is playing the main character, is the one thing. Also, this program voiced a strong support with regards to its TV star. But does it mean that he'll be in the pocket of Mr. Kolomoisky? Well, I would dismiss that view, because as we probably know, in the United States, in Western Europe,
I got to jump in here. I'll let you finish when we return. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT.
Social security accounts should have a mandatory 1% of all stock, bond, forex transactions should go into Social Security, so that every individual, let's say when they become 18, they've got $50,000-$60,000 in there that they can go spend on college if they want to. That is an externality of this economy that's being recycled, repurposed, regenerated into an ecosystem, an economy that is like more mimics that of nature.
U.S. veterans who come back from war often tell the same stories.
We were going after the people, and we were killing civilians. They were not interested in the well-being of their own soldiers either.
There are already several generations of them.
See, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office that says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years.
Americans pay for the wars with their money, others with their lives.
If we were willing to go into harm's way and willing to risk being killed for a war, then surely we can risk some discomfort or uneasiness for peace.
I've been saying the numbers mean something. They matter. The U.S. is over $20 trillion in debt. More than 10 white-collar crimes happen each day. 85% of global wealth belongs to the ultra-rich, 8.6%. And world markets rose 30%, some with 400 to 500 trades per second. And Bitcoin rose to $20,000. China's building a $2.1 billion AI industrial park. But don't let the numbers overwhelm you. The only number you need to remember is one. One business show you can't afford to miss. The one and only Boom Bust.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lamell. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Adriel in London here. Right before we went to the break, we were talking about the influence of Kolomoisky that could be on this candidate here. I would like to posit something for all members of the panel here. I think a lot of business interests are really sick and tired of how Poroshenko has steered the economy, and it also has a great deal to do with official Kiev, as I call it, post-Maidan Kiev, their attitude towards Russia. Well, it has really wreaked havoc on the economy. In theory, you know, you can redirect an economy, a country's economy in a different direction, but the European Union certainly is not interested in much of what Ukraine makes, and the official Kiev has denied the Russian market. It seems to me that, and I'm not singing the praises of Kolomoisky, but I'm sure people like him are saying, look, this is a dead end. We're not going to be embraced by the European Union anytime soon, considering all of its problems. There has to be some kind of rapprochement with Russia. And I know that's very hard in Ukraine right now, but there seems to be an opening at least. Adriel, in London, go ahead.
That was the very point that I made in my report presented for the Bo Group think tank. The report was titled The Sanctions on Russia. We were saying that in order to resolve the Ukrainian problems, Ukrainian people need both Europe and Russia, because this is a country which is leaning both towards the West, which is European Union, and this is the desire of young generation, young people over there, and also West Eastern part is aligning towards the Russia. And I think that the unifier, Mr. Zelensky, Mr. Volodymyr Zelensky, is a perfect face for doing this. I mean, we have to understand that no one is capable to resolve deeply rooted economic problems and mentality problems within the Ukrainian society within one day or even one term. So it is ridiculous to say that, oh, Mr. Poroshenko or Mr. Zelensky will resolve something. No, if there is a base, not only a political base or business base, but if is the desire within the society, then the real change can happen. And this is what is going to be. And I would just point out to my other colleagues in the panel that let us abandon the so far political conclusions or calculations which were done before Brexit and coming to the power of President Donald Trump, because they failed. And I think that the same template will be will apply to Mr. Zelensky. So it is unfair to use the old rules to the new game. The new generation, my generation, is fed up with the professional politicians and people who are well immersed within the political sphere and political class. Yeah. They need someone from the people and who can speak the language of other people, because most of the people are interested in prosperity and development of their countries. And this is what they
do. Just like everywhere else in the world here. John, you know, it would be very difficult because of the political discourse in Ukraine now and the Ukrainianization that Poroshenko has pushed so hard with his very dubious allies, these militia groups and far rightists. But it didn't serve him well in the first round of the election. And maybe this is what Zelensky and others are going to say, is that this track is not working. We have to try something else. Go ahead, in California.
No, therein lay Mr. Zelensky's path to victory. Remember, there's two Ukraines. There's the Russian-speaking part and there's the Ukrainian-speaking part. Mr. Zelensky is a Russian speaker, but he's also come out. He won't allow the Russian-speaking people to be marginalized, but he also speaks Ukrainian and is acceptable to the Ukrainian speakers. So he will carry and did do overwhelmingly well in the southeast Ukraine, where it is predominantly Russian-speaking, and then he'll split the other part of Ukraine with Mr. Poroshenko. Now, the big question here, the 900-pound gorilla in the room, is what does this mean for Russia and also for my country, the United States? The fact of the matter is that Western Europe and the European common market has sold out the Ukraine. I mean, they're building the Nord Stream pipeline. They want Russian gas, and they're bypassing the Ukraine. The Ukraine is only being kind of used by the West as a foil to Putin. But they've really, it's really been disappointing how Europe has treated Ukraine.
Well, Europe has to look at its own national interests. And I would point out to our audience is that Nord Stream and South Stream and these other pipelines were only built because Ukraine showed itself to be an unreliable energy partner. And they had no choice but to do it. Okay, well, no, I mean, Ukraine destroyed the pipelines. They siphoned it. They stole gas. They didn't want to pay for it. I mean, for God's sake, I remember twice, two years in a row on New Year's, up at midnight wondering if there's going to be a gas war. That problem is resolved because Ukraine ended up being not a reliable partner. And Russia continues to ask them to be an energy partner, and they say no. So what happened? It wasn't the Europeans that let the Ukrainians holding the bag. It was the Ukrainians themselves that did it. And they have to be able to work with Russia and the European Union, because you know what? It's in between. It's always been in between. You can't take it from one side or the other. I've been saying this ever since the Orange Revolution. Alexander Mikiris, weigh in.
Yes, I mean, I think what Mr. Zelensky needs to do is he needs to end this conflict in eastern Ukraine and sort things out with the Russians. He needs to reestablish normal commercial links with Russia so as to revive the Ukrainian economy. He has to end the conflict to bring the right-wing militias, all these various armed men that there are in Ukraine, all this very heavy nationalist atmosphere that exists in Ukraine, to bring that under control. Only if he does those things will he realistically be able to deal with these issues of corruption and of these overpowerful oligarchs, as they're called, that have such power in Ukraine, and bring Ukraine to become a normal country, as so many people in Ukraine want. Now, he's made some interesting signs. He's talked about the need for direct talks with Russia, which is a move forward. He's talked about having referendums about NATO and EU membership, which is also a step forward. I mean, Poroshenko tried to embed all these commitments in the Ukrainian constitution.
Yeah.
He's spoken to people in Ukraine in Russian, the Russian speakers there. He's made the right signals. The big question is, given the volatile political history in Ukraine, the extent to which so many people, so many powerful power brokers have been heavily invested in this anti-Russian policy that has been followed in Ukraine since 2014, given the large number of armed men there are in Ukraine, and given the fact that previous governments in Ukraine that have tried to tilt the country towards a more equal relationship between the EU and Russia, given that those governments have fallen, will he be able to pursue these policies? Now, on the one hand, I sense that there is an exhaustion in Ukraine,
yeah,
and there is a sense of disillusionment with the policies that have been followed. On the other, I come back to the point I made before. Does he have the political weight and strength and experience and ability to bring people together that he needs in order to be able to shift the ground in that way? I'm prepared to give him, you know, I hope he does, but, you know, I have to be skeptical and wait and see.
Adriel, let me go back to London. I have to agree with Alexander Mikiris. I mean, you know, I know Ukraine well. I've been there many, many times. I've been banned since 2014 for obvious reasons, I suppose. But, I mean, it's really a country of cliques and connections. There's a great Russian word, krisha, which means roof, where you basically have protection. I mean, that's how the economy is run here. I mean, I think it's wonderful that this outsider could make an entry onto the stage of national politics. But other than his light humor, and he's a very affable person, the tools that he needs to push through whatever he wants to, because we're not really sure what he wants to do, is going to be very, very difficult. The administrative workings and parliament itself will have to have goodwill toward him to have that even happen. Go ahead, in London.
Well, I think that we have to be slightly more optimistic with this regard.
That's why I like having you on. You know, that's why I like having you on.
Thank you very much. I think that Mr. Donald Trump also is not a professional politician. He's a businessman. So I think that we need to abandon this, this political logic of having a people who are supported by someone and something. We know that people, the professional politicians in the Ukraine, and I totally agree with you, Peter, have this stigma of being crooks. And there's no doubt about it. But the hope is that this person can wade in. Just going back to the previous commentator, I think that Mr. Zelensky is a perfect person as a descendant of Jewish people to tempt the Azov and fascist movements within the Ukraine, because it, to me, as a person also of Jewish heritage, would be insane to not being a president of Jewish descendants and not trying to tame the anti-Semitic and fascist movements who are there with their nationalism against Russia, which is insane. So I put my hope in Mr. Zelensky as other Ukrainian young people from my generation, and the time will tell whether he will deliver something or whether he will be just a puppet or a useless person put in the seat of the leader in charge of Ukraine. But I put my hope in Mr. Zelensky, and I hope that he will make such a great president as he's making
What I think we should do is that the first round is over. When we have the second round, I'd like to have all of you come back, and we will discuss the final round of Ukraine's presidential election. It's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in London and in California, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules.